Imagine a world where your child can effortlessly navigate between two cultures, think more creatively, and even potentially delay cognitive aging by 4 years. This isn't science fiction. It's the reality for children raised with two languages. Barbara Zura Pearson's groundbreaking work, Raising a Bilingual Child, has become the definitive guide for parents navigating this journey, drawing on over 20 years of research in language acquisition and bilingualism. The book has garnered praise from linguistic experts like Noam Chomsky and has influenced educational policies worldwide. Even celebrities like Penelope Cruz and Shakira have cited it as instrumental in their approach to raising bilingual children. In our increasingly globalized world, this resource transforms what many perceive as a challenging endeavor into an achievable goal with lifelong benefits. What happens in the brain of a bilingual person? Do they have one language system or two? This question has fascinated researchers for decades. Early studies of bilingual stroke patients provided intriguing clues. Sometimes one language remained intact while the other was impaired, suggesting different storage locations in the brain. Modern brain imaging techniques, particularly fMRI studies, have revealed a more nuanced picture. Bilinguals don't simply have duplicate mental systems, but rather shared resources for some functions, while other elements remain distributed between languages. For instance, core grammar processing areas, like Broca's and Wernicke's areas, serve both languages, while vocabulary storage shows more separation. The evidence suggests that learning two languages requires more effort than one, but not twice as much, as each language contributes additional mental resources. Research shows that bilinguals develop enhanced executive function, particularly in areas of attention control and task switching. Bilinguals can operate in either monolingual mode, using languages separately in different contexts, or bilingual mode, using both languages together. When speaking, both languages are initially activated in parallel, but the speaker must decide whether to suppress one or allow both to remain active. This constant language selection process strengthens neural pathways associated with cognitive control. Some bilinguals describe switching between language hats depending on context, while others blend their languages when conversing with fellow bilinguals. Code switching, seamlessly moving between languages, isn't a sign of linguistic deficiency, but a sophisticated skill mastered only after achieving proficiency in both languages. It can be lexical, switching to use words that lack precise equivalence in the other language, like joie de vivre or chutzpah, or grammatical, triggered by words represented in both languages, especially proper names. Research has identified specific patterns in code switching, showing it follows precise grammatical rules rather than occurring randomly. The bilingual brain remains remarkably flexible, adapting to different linguistic contexts with ease. This constant juggling between language systems creates what researchers call cognitive reserve, a kind of mental resilience that appears to protect against cognitive decline later in life. Studies have shown that bilingual seniors develop dementia symptoms an average of 4 years later than their monolingual counterparts, a benefit no known medication can match. This protective effect appears strongest in those who regularly use both languages throughout their lives and has been observed across different language pairs and cultural contexts. Recent research suggests this cognitive advantage extends beyond dementia protection to enhanced recovery from stroke and better performance on complex problem-solving tasks. The neuroplasticity demonstrated by bilingual brains has implications beyond language learning. Scientists have observed structural changes in bilingual brains, including increased density in areas associated with language processing and executive function. These changes appear most pronounced in early bilinguals, but can occur at any age, supporting the idea that language learning remains beneficial throughout life. Recent research suggests this cognitive advantage extends beyond dementia protection to enhanced recovery from stroke and better performance on complex problem-solving tasks. Children possess remarkable language learning abilities that far surpass those of adults. While some attribute adults' language learning difficulties to psychological barriers or inadequate immersion, extensive research evidence suggests children truly are better language learners, as shown by their error patterns, speed of acquisition, and ultimate attainment levels. Studies comparing child and adult learners consistently demonstrate that children achieve native-like proficiency more frequently, particularly in areas like pronunciation and intuitive grammar usage. Infants come equipped with extraordinary biological advantages for language acquisition, exceptionally acute hearing with preference for complex sounds, superior ability to localize voices, and heightened focus on human faces and mouth movements. Perhaps their greatest advantage is heightened brain activity. Their brains work at twice the metabolic rate of adults until around age 9, creating approximately 15,000 neural connections per neuron in the first 5 years. This neural hyperactivity supports their intensive language learning phase before pruning unused connections to reach adult efficiency levels. Research using brain imaging shows that infants utilize broader neural networks when processing language, engaging multiple brain regions simultaneously. Children's legendary sound discrimination abilities are temporary gifts that support language acquisition. As Janet Worker's famous experiments at the University of British Columbia showed, babies initially distinguish all possible speech sounds, but gradually tune their perception to focus only on contrasts relevant to their ambient languages. For example, by 12 months, English learning babies no longer differentiate certain Hindi consonant contrasts that Hindi learning babies continue to perceive. However, children under 7 retain enough flexibility to learn new sound distinctions, while adults struggle with more stable but less adaptable sound representations. This phenomenon explains why children raised in multilingual environments can achieve native-like pronunciation in multiple languages. Young children also possess an exceptional grammar-making capacity that actively seeks and creates patterns in language input. They often impose more regularity than exists in their input, as demonstrated by Simon, a deaf child who developed more grammatical sign language than his late-learning deaf parents provided. Similar cases have been documented with children of pidgin speakers who transform simplified language into full grammatical systems. Children extract rules from irregular usage and apply them consistently, as evidenced by common overgeneralization errors like good instead of went, demonstrating their ability to go beyond their input and construct systematic grammar rules. This special language learning window doesn't last forever, though it tapers gradually rather than ending abruptly. A trade-off exists between children's language learning facility and mature cognitive mastery. Children's brains dedicate extra resources to language acquisition for approximately 5 to 6 years before shifting to more efficient but less flexible processing. What does this mean for parents? Introducing languages earlier is generally better, but the window doesn't slam shut at a specific age. Children retain significant language learning advantages through elementary school. Research indicates that while optimal periods exist for different aspects of language, pronunciation before age 6 to 7, grammar before age 12 to 13, meaningful language learning can occur at any age with appropriate motivation and exposure. One of the most persistent concerns parents express is whether learning two languages might delay their child's language development. Research consistently shows this fear is unfounded. Bilingual children reach language milestones at the same time as monolingual children. Early language milestones occur at remarkably similar ages worldwide, regardless of how many languages children are learning. Mature babbling emerges around 6 months, first words around 12 months, and two-word combinations around 18 months, with substantial normal variation in all cases. Studies comparing monolingual and bilingual babies find them squarely within these same developmental windows. When comparing vocabulary between monolinguals and bilinguals, researchers must use specialized measurements. The most comprehensive assessment tracks multiple measures separately: total word forms across languages, concepts with associated words, and vocabulary in each language. Research from the University of Miami Infant Studies revealed that bilingual infants actually scored significantly higher than monolinguals in receptive vocabulary when measuring total conceptual vocabulary. For expressive vocabulary, while bilinguals scored slightly lower in each individual language, their total conceptual vocabulary matched monolinguals almost exactly. Even the apparent delay in certain phonetic tasks has been misinterpreted. When learning words with minimal sound contrasts, like bih versus dih, bilinguals show a 3-month delay compared to monolinguals. They master this skill at 20 months rather than 17. However, this doesn't represent a real disadvantage, since early vocabulary rarely depends on such similar-sounding words. This apparent delay might actually reflect a useful strategy where bilinguals remain flexible about sound categories across their languages rather than making premature distinctions. Headlines claiming bilinguals pull down standardized test scores often rely on flawed studies, making uneven comparisons, or using inappropriate measures. Early studies comparing bilinguals and monolinguals from the 1920s-30s failed to control for critical factors beyond language status. They typically compared middle-class monolingual children familiar with testing against immigrant bilingual children unfamiliar with both testing situations and cultural references in the test items. When proper controls are implemented, the picture changes dramatically. The University of Miami Language and Literacy Study demonstrated that socioeconomic status was the strongest statistical effect after age for all English tests, with differences between high and low SES within language groups often exceeding differences between language groups themselves. Creating an environment where children can develop two languages requires understanding that everything applicable to learning one language applies equally to learning multiple languages. Parents don't teach language directly, but create environments where language develops naturally. The key challenge is establishing the minority language, since the majority language of school, commerce, and media will develop naturally. Research suggests children need the minority language for at least 20% of waking hours, roughly 15 hours weekly, with some researchers recommending 30%, 25 hours. If exposure falls below 20 hours, parents should consider supplementary sources, particularly from monolingual speakers of the minority language. Several proven strategies can help families establish a bilingual environment. In One Parent, One Language, OPAL, each parent consistently addresses the child in a different language. Typically, parents use their native languages, though non-native speakers can implement this strategy too. First proposed by Grammont in 1902, OPAL remains popular in Europe and Canada, with proponents arguing children easily separate languages by person. With minority language at home, MLH, both parents speak only the minority language at home, regardless of whether they're native speakers. Bilingual parents typically use the majority language outside the home. Once considered unfashionable, this approach is gaining favor as it provides more minority language exposure than OPAL. The time and place strategy varies language use by both time and location. OPAL families might switch to MLH on weekends, or families might follow a yearly cycle, using MLH most of the year but switching completely to the minority language during extended visits to countries where it's spoken. Mixed language policy has no formal directions. Parents simply use whichever language suits the topic or situation. While common in places like Miami and Singapore, this approach doesn't carve out protected space for the minority language against the powerful linguistic inertia favoring the majority language. Based on Baron Howard's survey of over 100 bilingual families, both OPAL and minority language at home strategies show similar success rates, approximately 63% and 62.5%, respectively. The data suggests that the best strategy is the one that fits your family's particular circumstances. There is no universally superior approach. Beyond the obvious advantages of speaking two languages, research confirms that bilingual children gain expanded capabilities across all three main language functions: communicating, thinking, and cultural learning. These benefits extend far beyond language itself. Bilingual children develop earlier awareness of languages' formal properties and structures. Because both languages remain active in a bilingual brain, these children constantly make subconscious decisions about which language to use or interpret, developing superior metalinguistic awareness, the ability to see language as an object of study rather than just using it transparently. This skill helps them understand the abstract connection between letters and sounds earlier, making them better writers and more effective language users. In Bialystok's moving word task, when a card with the word king was moved from under a king picture to under a bird picture, 82% of bilingual emergent readers correctly identified the word remained king, compared to only 38% of monolinguals. The University of Miami's study of 960 children further demonstrated that bilingual children in dual language programs eventually outperformed both monolinguals and bilinguals in English-only programs in reading tests. Bilinguals also demonstrate superior mental flexibility across multiple cognitive domains. In creativity tests, they produce more uses for common objects like paper clips or bricks than monolinguals. In science inquiry programs, they generate 3 times more high-quality hypotheses for solving problems, even when coming from less advantaged socioeconomic backgrounds. Perhaps most impressively, bilinguals consistently outperform monolinguals in selective attention tasks across different language pairs and age groups. They excel at focusing on specific aspects of tasks while suppressing distractions. Bilinguals research revealed that elderly bilinguals, average age 70, maintained this cognitive advantage over monolingual peers. A follow-up study of 184 patients with dementia showed bilingualism delayed onset by approximately 4 years compared to monolinguals, 75 versus 71 years. This advantage stems from executive function, the ability to coordinate distinct activities for goal-oriented tasks, which bilinguals strengthen whenever they choose and switch between languages. The bilingual advantage applies specifically to tasks requiring meta-knowledge and high executive control, though research continues on exactly how bilingual one must be to experience these benefits. Nearly every bilingual family encounters resistance at some point when children refuse to use the minority language. This resistance typically emerges between ages 3 to 7 and can manifest in various ways: one-word responses, nonverbal answers, physically leaving the room, or persistently interrupting with the majority language. Some children may even declare outright that they hate the minority language or find it boring. Parents should first examine their own behavior patterns, including consistency in language use, emotional reactions to language choices, and the amount of engaging minority language content they provide. How parents respond when children use the wrong language sends powerful messages about expectations and language values. The "I don't understand" strategy, where parents pretend not to comprehend the majority language, works surprisingly well across age groups. Children often accept this pretense even when they regularly observe parents using the majority language with others, demonstrating their remarkable ability to compartmentalize language rules. Many children maintain strict mental boundaries about language use, sometimes enforcing these rules more rigidly than their parents, correcting siblings, or even scolding parents for breaking language rules. Sibling dynamics present a particular challenge in minority language maintenance. Research consistently shows that siblings almost invariably use the majority language when left alone, regardless of their proficiency in both languages. This pattern emerges even in families where children are highly bilingual and parents maintain strict language policies. While parents can request minority language use in their presence, attempting to control sibling language choice during private interactions often proves counterproductive. This pattern holds remarkably consistent across cultures and contexts. Studies of immigrant families show that even children who arrive speaking only their native language switch to the majority language with peers within 6 to 12 months. Supplementing home efforts with outside resources becomes increasingly crucial as children grow older, especially in English-dominant countries. Regular contact with monolingual speakers of the minority language provides invaluable reinforcement, since these interactions eliminate language choice negotiations. Older adults, particularly those who've maintained their native language despite long-term residence abroad, and young children who haven't yet started school, make ideal language models. They naturally create situations where using the minority language becomes necessary rather than optional. Grandparents often serve as linguistic anchors, providing both powerful motivation and authentic language reinforcement. Their extended visits, typically lasting weeks or months, create sustained periods of minority language immersion without the risk of cultural assimilation that permanent residents might face. The emotional connection between grandparents and grandchildren generates natural motivation for communication, often inspiring children to push through language barriers they might otherwise resist. For families with access to extended family support, bilingual schools can provide tremendous advantages, offering both structured language learning and peer interaction in the minority language. When formal bilingual education isn't available, parents should actively create social networks through regular playgroups for children and support groups for themselves. Annual trips to countries where the minority language is spoken can dramatically boost children's skills and motivation. Many parents report noticeable improvements in their children's language abilities within days of arrival, with benefits lasting several months after return. These immersion experiences often trigger linguistic breakthroughs, particularly in vocabulary acquisition and willingness to communicate in the minority language. Language disorders don't necessarily rule out bilingualism. Historically, educators quickly blamed developmental delays in bilingual children on the second language, recommending its elimination. However, no evidence supports this approach. Research indicates children with specific language impairment, SLI, learning a second language in immersion settings suffer no harm to their first language skills or academic achievement. Their impairment in the first language matches that of SLI children in single language programs. Most bilingual children with language impairment show equivalent disorders in both languages, though symptoms differ because languages present different vulnerabilities. English learners struggle with verb inflections, while Spanish learners have more trouble with pronouns. Language mixing is frequently misinterpreted as problematic when it's actually normal bilingual behavior. Much of children's mixing reflects patterns in their bilingual community. If adults switch between languages in conversation, children naturally do the same. Parents should seek testing when a child learns verbal material significantly more slowly than peers, especially if they notice problems with language structures that typically signal difficulties in monolinguals. Since diagnostic measures for bilingual children don't exist, monolingual measures must be applied cautiously, making allowances for reduced language exposure. Importantly, parents shouldn't dismiss serious delays as simply because he's bilingual. Many delays can be addressed with speech therapy. Therapy in one language often benefits both languages, especially if conducted in the dominant language, though bilingual intervention is generally more effective than monolingual approaches. Many parents regret abandoning their native language with their child based on misguided advice from teachers or pediatricians who lack expertise in bilingual development. Parents face a delicate balance between confidence and stubbornness when making language decisions for children with impairments. Dropping a language, especially a first language, rarely solves underlying problems and may cut children off from vital support systems. However, when impairments exist, parents must weigh whether the practical value of minority languages outweighs potential frustration. The child's overall welfare must remain paramount. While bilingualism and well-being usually align, health and welfare must take precedence when conflicts arise. Far from being a source of fragmentation, bilingualism is celebrated by most who experience it. While critics historically claimed bilingualism leads to schizophrenia or halved development, these assertions have been thoroughly debunked by modern linguistic research. Studies from major universities consistently show that bilingual individuals demonstrate enhanced cognitive flexibility, better problem-solving skills, and improved cultural awareness. Bilingual writers and the author's respondents overwhelmingly describe the enriching experience of inhabiting multiple linguistic worlds, comparing it to having additional windows through which to view reality. Many bilinguals report distinct physical and psychological sensations when switching languages. These include different mouth postures, facial expressions, and even personality shifts that align with each language's cultural context. For instance, Spanish-English bilinguals often describe feeling more expressive and animated when speaking Spanish, while Japanese-English speakers note adopting more formal body language in Japanese. Novelist Ava Hoffman's autobiographical journey from teenage language anguish to adult linguistic integration powerfully demonstrates how two languages can eventually cooperate rather than compete in forming one sturdy structure. Her experience mirrors countless others who initially struggle with dual identities before discovering the unique advantages of their linguistic duality. Bilingual upbringing benefits not just individuals, but entire communities, particularly where minority languages face extinction. Joshua Fishman, leading expert on endangered languages, emphasizes that without intentional bilingual child rearing, many minority languages will disappear within three generations. When parents actively speak heritage languages at home, they create living bridges between past and present, helping preserve not just words, but entire cultural worldviews. Studies show that children raised in bilingual households develop stronger family bonds and deeper connections to their cultural heritage. The Welsh revival serves as a compelling example of how local languages can be preserved despite intense competition from global languages. Though Welsh has less immediate economic value than English, and virtually no Welsh speakers are monolingual today, dedicated language activists and policymakers have successfully worked to maintain their linguistic heritage. The percentage of Welsh speakers fell dramatically from 50% in 1901 to 19% in 1981, but rose to 21% by 2001 through strategic initiatives, including mandatory Welsh education in schools, bilingual government services, and the establishment of the Welsh Language Board. This success story has become a model for other minority language preservation efforts worldwide. While a universal language might seem practically appealing, local languages serve irreplaceable cultural and cognitive functions. They're uniquely equipped to express local realities. Inuit languages have dozens of words describing snow conditions. Chinese makes crucial distinctions between maternal and paternal relatives, and Quechua has separate inclusive and exclusive forms of we that reflect community boundaries. Just as biodiversity strengthens ecosystems, linguistic diversity provides humanity with multiple frameworks for understanding reality and solving problems. Research shows that different languages often encode different problem-solving approaches, making multilingualism a valuable cognitive resource. Rather than viewing Babel as a curse, linguistic diversity represents a profound gift to humanity, not confusion, but cornucopia, allowing humans to transcend their immediate perspective and imagine new possibilities. Childhood bilinguals represent our strongest asset in preserving endangered languages and their associated cultures while building crucial bridges between different ways of understanding our world. As globalization accelerates, this ability to navigate multiple linguistic and cultural frameworks becomes increasingly valuable for both individuals and societies.